The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to Hour 1 of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB, Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night, the 15th day of March, after which I'll hand it off to Andrew Joseph and Eric Getzoff for hour number two. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is across the way. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll welcome in the legendary basketball Hall of Famer, the Big O, Oscar Robertson. And in the second half, we'll talk to Rangers and Islanders defenseman Darius Kasparaitis. So sit back and relax and enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight on WGBB. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page, Sports Talk 1240. You'll find sports information, show information, and more right there. So stop by and give us a look. Then you can give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Sports Talk 1240. And all past shows can be heard on our website at www.sportstalk1240.com. Well, my first guest played for the Cincinnati Royals and the Milwaukee Bucks. He was a 12-time All-Star, 11-time member of the All-NBA team, and a winner of the MVP award in 14 professional seasons. He's the only player in NBA history to average a triple-double for an entire season. Oscar's the only two-time Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame inductee, having been inducted in 1980 for his individual playing career, and also in 2010 as a member of the 1960 U.S. Men's Olympic gold medal-winning basketball team. He was also voted one of the 50 greatest players in NBA history in 1996. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight the Big O, Oscar Robertson. Oscar, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you with us. Now, Oscar, when you were growing up, who were your favorite players? What teams did you root for when you were a kid?
Well, actually, I didn't know very much about professional basketball when I grew up, but I did know the Harlem Globetrotters, and I would say Marcus Ames and Goose Tatum and the guys on the team on the only basketball players, other than the local high schools and some of the high school players who played against the high schools in Indianapolis. That's all I knew about professional basketball early on. And I guess then, the Olympians had a team for a little while in Indianapolis, but there were some problems with the team, and they disbanded.
Okay. Now, you went to Crispus Attucks High School in Indianapolis. You won two state championships there on your junior and senior high school, correct? In junior and senior year. Yeah. Now, Crispus Attucks, that high school was designed for segregation, correct?
That's true. It was put there because whoever put it there, and I guess it was the local politician backed by the Ku Klux Klan, who was real big in Indianapolis in those days, decided they didn't want blacks going to the white schools or the black professors there teaching in white schools. So they built Crispus Attucks High School.
Yeah. So you ran into racism fairly early in your life, Oscar.
To be honest, I was totally unaware of it.
Yeah.
Because where I lived, I went to school, went to church, went down to Tennessee to see my grandparents in the summertime, and you just don't see things until you get out. Mm-hmm. You start to read about all the things and hear other people start talking about things, and then you say, wow, that's unbelievable. You just don't really believe those things ever happened, but they did.
Yeah. Okay. Now, from Crispus Attucks on to the University of Cincinnati.
Yes, I did.
Now, why did you pick or why did you choose to go to the University of Cincinnati, Oscar?
Well, a couple of reasons. One, I didn't have an opportunity to go to Indiana University. Branch McCracken, who was the coach there, didn't want me to go there. So I picked Cincinnati because I wanted to get a degree in business.
Okay.
Because actually, when I came to the University of Cincinnati, I didn't know what kind of basketball team they had. I don't know if they had a very good basketball team or not. I don't think they did. So I was totally unaware of it.
Well, when you left Cincinnati, you averaged 33.8 points per game, which is the third highest in college history. Not too bad. And when you left college, you were the all-time leading NCAA scorer until a guy named Pistol Pete topped you in 1970.
Well, did you play 4 years?
I don't think so. Did he?
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, what kind of, you played against Pistol Pete, didn't you?
Oh, I'm in pros. You know, I mean, Pete averaged 40-some points a game when he was at LSU. No, I didn't. I played 3 years. I only took to play 3 years.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he played, if he didn't play 4 years or not.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter because it's water over the dam anyway.
Right. I understand. Yeah. I think he did play 4 years. You're right, Oscar. Yeah. Now, despite your success on the court, Oscar, you run into racism again in college, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, this was America. I mean, you know, this
yeah.
was always around. And, you know, and to be honest, I must tell you, in all honesty, I was not the only one. There were a lot of other black ball players who were going to school at First Ones, at, you know, at certain of these schools and locations and whatnot. You know, they ran into the same thing. You know, it just the way the country was, you know. You know, you look around and you hear all these things that were going on. I wonder why there wasn't a governing body to look after those things for black athletes.
Nothing. Yeah, you're exactly right. But as you say, that's America at the time.
Yes, yep. It was.
Yep. Now, in 1960, you went to the Olympic Games, and that was some ball club assembled there. With you had Terry Dissinger from Purdue. You had your future teammate, Jerry Lucas, Jerry West, Bob Boozer, Daryl Imhoff. Talk a little about the 1960 Olympic Games, Oscar.
Well, the 1960 Olympic team was a very good basketball team. We started out in Denver in the Denver Trials, where you go out there for seven days, maybe 10 days. You play 7 nights in a row, and the winning team gets to place a starting five on the Olympic team. And so the team that I was on, with Dissinger, Imhoff, J. Arnett, Jerry West, and Tom Spitz, Lenny Wilkins, Roger Kaiser, a lot of those guys. So we got to place off. We should have had our whole team on the Olympic team, but we weren't able to do that because AAU was so strong then. They made us take four or five guys from AAU, and that's the way our team was composed.
I forgot about Bellamy. Yeah, I didn't mention Bell's Bellamy, another great name.
Well, actually, Bellamy didn't start for us. He was trying to make sure that Daryl Imhoff, who got into the Olympics, as a starter on our team, he got the start. But as soon as he played a minute, Coach Noel would take him out and put Bellamy in.
Yeah, well, I think Walt was a little better ball player than Daryl.
Just a little bit better.
Yeah. Hall of Fame caliber, Walt Bellamy, definitely. We're speaking to the great Oscar Robertson tonight. And then you were drafted by the Cincinnati Royals. Were you happy that you stayed local, Oscar?
At the time, I was. But I must tell you, I mean, the draft is a part of the system, but I think the draft hurts great ball players because they stick you with a team that has no chance at all of winning, and you go to a team as a player that can play, you're years away from getting anything done.
Yeah.
You're not going to achieve anything. You're not going to achieve anything at all. If a guy comes out of college today, let's see, who's the number one ball player?
Today?
Yeah. I would just say XYZ goes to Philadelphia.
Right. Somebody from Kentucky.
There.
Yeah.
And is it fair to this player? I mean, you know, I think they should have the right to choose the team they go to.
That's a good point. Yeah, nobody's going to bring a team out of the doldrums like that.
Well, no, because if you look at basketball over the years, every team that's won a championship or had won multiple championships have made a trade. Start with Bill Russell when he was drafted by St. Louis, and because they didn't want any black players there, he goes to Boston. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here, Oscar. Go ahead.
He went to Boston for Ed McCauley and Cliff Hagan.
Right.
And so he goes to Boston, and the rest is history.
Exactly.
Wilt Chamberlain goes to the Lakers. Shaq goes to the Lakers, And it just on and on. And Kareem went to the Lakers. Kareem went to the Lakers after he had a successful years with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Right, and that's when things happen.
I was traded to the Bucks. I mean, there. If you look at basketball and look what David Stern gave the Boston Celtics a championship, and he let all those players go there that one year.
Yep.
So this is what's going on in basketball. You know, I mean, I think the draft is not very kind to great basketball players.
No, that's your point. Yeah, I agree, Oscar. I see your point. Now, you averaged 30 points, 10.1 rebounds, 9.7 assists. You led the league, almost averaged a triple-double for your entire season, named Rookie of the Year, All-NBA first season, which would happen in each of your 9 first seasons. However, as you say, there's your point. The Royals finish in the cellar of the Western Division.
Yes.
Hence your point.
And you know, because if you know, you look at basketball today and yesteryear, why is it that all this teams, primarily in cities that's not very popular, say less than 1 million people, always complain about paying money? Look at baseball, football, any of these teams. It seems the teams on the New Yorks, the Bostons, the Los Angeles, San Francisco's, they never have money. Or Seattle's, they don't have money paying players. It always seems that teams in inner parts of America, they always have money. I always talk about it. Well, you know, we're not in a big market. We can't do this, can't do that. But yet, still, they want great players. They want you to play like you did in the 100 million, and yet they're only paying you one.
That's right. It doesn't happen.
It does not.
Right. Well, the next season, you still further establish yourself as one of the great players, but yet you bring the Royals further. You advance to the Eastern Division Finals, but you come against a Bill Russell-led Celtic team. Now, how is it playing against Bill Russell now? Talk a little bit about Bill Russell, Oscar.
Well, you know, I mean, they have three or four star ball players. They didn't have just one. Russell was a great defensive player, but he wasn't that offensive. Which is, you have to have offensive score. The whole problem is that the team I was on and other teams like Detroit, St. Louis, the management did not know what was going on. They didn't know how to put teams together. In pro basketball, you can't get a guy because he plays 25 miles from the city and put him on the team, say he's a good player, because he's not. If you got to get the best player, that's why it's called professional basketball. And we were not able to do that. You know, they wanted to get local players, and local players didn't get the job done.
But then they brought in a supporting cast for you, Oscar. They brought in Lucas. They brought in Jack Twyman. They brought in Wayne Embry.
That's not quite true now.
Okay, go ahead.
Jerry Lucas came in after I did. But before that, they had Wayne, Jack, and some other people. They only won like 19 games. So when I came, we won a few more games, and Lucas came. But you have to understand that, you know, and I look at basketball players, and you look and see why are some more successful than others. You know, you got to be able to put the ball on the floor and go somewhere.
Right.
You know, our team couldn't do that. None of the players you mentioned could go anywhere with a basketball but me.
All right.
And if you look at basketball today, I look at a successful basketball team. I look at Kentucky, and I look at Wisconsin. I even look at Gonzaga. Every person on those teams can put the ball on the floor and go somewhere with the basketball. They don't just go in there and stand and pray someone throws you the ball so you can dunk it. They can move around with the ball. That's what basketball is all about.
So you feel that guys like Russell and Chamberlain, the success that they had were due to having the supporting cast of having the guys that could move with the ball?
Well, although I would say this, Russell was more agile than Will.
Right.
As far as moving with the ball. But, yes, I don't doubt about it. You know, they had 3 or 4 stars. The Celtics had 3 or 4 stars on their team.
Right. He had Jerry West.
No, not that's the Lakers. Lakers had Jerry West and they all
Elgin Baylor.
Primarily those two guys. Southern had three or four guys doing that, and they won a lot. And they won that almost every year. You know, it takes – people don't realize that. They say, oh, well, this guy's a great coach. This guy's a great coach. And I was in an All-Star game once, and Adolph Rupp, you know, but he had his problems too, but came out and said, great players make great coaches. And I never forget that as long as I live. Look at all these situations where the players, where you have great coaches, they got great players on the floor making plays for them.
That's not necessarily true, though, is it, Oscar, that great players make great coaches?
Well, tell me ones that don't.
Bob Cousy?
Well, I'm saying great players make great coaches. No. Don't get the two mixed up.
Okay.
I'm not saying that because the guy's a great player, he's going to be a great coach.
I misunderstood you.
Yeah, if you're a coach on a team, you got great players, you're going to look good as a coach. You're right. Not all great players make great coaches.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Now let's talk a little. Go back to Cincinnati. We'll talk a little bit about Cousy and being a coach. I remember that as a kid watching that the Knick game when they won the 19th in a row. You remember that one, Oscar?
Sure, I remember the well. I was in Cleveland, Ohio.
Right.
I saw the game, and we were 5 points when maybe 20 seconds on the clock, and Cousy puts himself in, throws the ball away, and we get beat.
Right. Yeah, and the Knicks end up winning their 19th in a row. Now
isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
one of the greatest ball handlers in the history of basketball throws the ball away, and we get beat.
Yeah. I still remember that game. I was watching it, old black and white TV. And, I thought the Knicks were going down. I said, they're not going to win this game. Yeah. And then,
not a one.
And then there's the old Celtic. I see him taking the warm up suit off. I said, this guy's putting himself in the game. And there he comes. Oh, yeah. But that's one that I'll never forget, Oscar.
I soon forgot it because here again, if you got ownership and you're going to let somebody do that, why, as a player, I don't worry about it.
No, I understand. Yeah.
If they're that stupid to let that happen, then let it happen.
Exactly. Now, you go to Milwaukee. Were you glad to leave Cincinnati?
It got to be a point where the papers. Kept saying that I didn't do anything and I didn't play well. I hadn't done all I had done. I made all pro first team for 10 straight years. But this is the type of talent Cincinnati was. Black ball players that didn't get the same recognition as the white ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I give you a good example of that. Look at Frank Robinson.
Right.
Frank Robinson was traded and they said he was old, couldn't do this. What does he do when he goes to Baltimore?
He wins another triple crown.
And they won the World Series.
Exactly, yeah.
But still, the people here are led by newspaper because they didn't want to give credit to a black bat foot baseball player. And the same thing happened to me. They said that I didn't do anything here for 10 straight years.
That was a great example with Frank Robinson, Oscar.
Well,
yeah,
that's fine if they want to say that. But still, there should have been. There are people here who knew better,
right?
They seen that they joined the course. I mean, I didn't see them marching to help me out so much. I'm sure there were some who voiced their opinion, but it wasn't like they went to the newspaper saying, "Oh, no, this didn't happen, or that didn't happen." They just said that I didn't do anything for 10 straight years, and so after that point, I just felt that I was going to leave.
Right. Now,
I did not want to play here anymore at all.
Well, I don't blame you. Now, in the same vein with Frank Robinson, what does Oscar Robertson do when he goes to Milwaukee? He wins the NBA title.
We won a title.
Imagine that. Now, he goes and plays with the young Lou Alcindor. The great young center in Milwaukee. For those young people who are listening, the young Lou Alcindor is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the Hall of Famer.
That's true.
And Oscar wins the first championship of the Milwaukee Bucks with Lou Alcindor, And would have won two if it wasn't for the Celtics and one Dave Cowens, who was inspired, I guess, during that
series.
Oh, that's
true, but Lucius Allen got hurt. He got hurt.
Yeah.
He got hurt the second year and the last year. He was going after loose ball and got hurt. The Celtics beat us, and I'll give him credit for beating us, winning a championship. But if you win a championship with a group of guys, you got 10 guys who play basketball to win a championship. Do you trade six of the four or five of them away?
No.
Do you trade a starter on a championship team away?
No.
We did. The Bucks did.
Right.
That's why we couldn't win anymore.
Poor reason. Yeah, not good. Not good, Oscar.
Well, when you ask people questions, I guess no one ever went to the Bucks. Why'd you do this? Why'd you trade a starter? Why'd you trade your backup center and your backup forward, Boozer? They traded Greg Smith, a starter, Bob Boozer, McCoy McAmore, and Dick Cunningham, who were all very critical to us winning basketball games. Because if you don't have a good bench of basketball, you're not going to win anything at all.
No. Well, that's what kept them from beating the Celtics, too, then.
Of course. We Cincinnati, we had nothing off the bench. I averaged 46 minutes a game my first 8 or 9 years at Cincinnati. Never took me out.
Well, that's why the statistics show what they do. It's not only a player who excels, Oscar Robertson. It's a player who plays hard.
Well, you got to put the minutes in order to get the rebounds as a guard. You got to put in some time.
Exactly.
And then here again, you go into a situation. I'll give you two examples. One, I'll give you an example about Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain. When I was told on a telecast once that the greatest shot blocker in the history of basketball was Mutombo.
And what did you say?
I said, wait, there's something wrong. I said, what about Bill Russell and Will Chamberlain? Well, they didn't keep stats until a certain year. I said, well, then you shouldn't keep that stat. You know, they shouldn't have that stat. They just said, this is the greatest rebounder since 19, whatever that time was.
Right.
And you take assists. When I played, an assist is not like the assist they have today, where I throw you the ball and you dribble all over the floor. If you don't pass, you make a basket and assist. I throw you the ball from cross corner all the way to the other corner, and you make a move on the guy and score. That was not an assist when I played. Assist was pass you the ball, going to the basket.
Right.
If a lot of dribbles involved in it, it was not called an assist at all. So therefore, assists have been cheapened over the last 20 or 30 years, I must tell you.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Good point. Good point, and a good point with the shot blocking too, with Mutombo compared to guys like Chamberlain and Bill Russell.
And did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Well, that's what they tell me, that they didn't keep stats for blocking shots until a certain years. This was after Russell and Wilt Chamberlain had retired. But look what it does to them.
Yeah. Not fair. Yeah.
I think it's an insult to them as basketball players.
It certainly is.
For that to happen.
Amazing. One thing too I'd like to bring up, Oscar, is the suit that you brought as head of the Players Association. One other great thing that Oscar Robertson did for the players.
Well, the Oscar Robertson suit was a suit where we fought for free agency, player rights, better air travel, better having doctors at the game that could treat you in case you got hurt. Which happened in the late 70s. But I was not alone in that. There were several guys who were very instrumental. I'm going to mention a few that I can recall. Larry Fleischer, of course. There was Wes Huntle, Dave DeBuscher, and Bill Bradley, and There may have been some other guys, but I just can't recall them right now. But we were there when and finally we got the suit passed. The owners agreed, so therefore you can see a situation there where what does Kobe Bryant make a year?
He makes a lot of money.
Well, and the reason he makes that money is because of the Oscar Robertson suit.
There you go, folks. Yeah.
Reason guys are making $20 million, $15 million, and $10 million, and some guys who never get in the game make $3 and $4 million is because of the Oscar Robertson suit.
Folks should look that up. Google the Oscar Robertson suit, and you'll see why these guys make the money they do. It's because of the suit that Oscar Robertson brought against the owners, and that's the reason why the salaries are like today, and the reason players can make the money they do is because of this lawsuit. It's amazing.
Well, of course, you have a right to go to another team if you don't have a contract.
Exactly.
Teams today. I mean, it's amazing how some teams can get five or six players making $20 million a year. Others can't. I guess they pay the luxury tax on it.
Yeah, maybe. What's Oscar doing these days?
I'm in Cincinnati. I have a couple of companies. We have a facilities management company, and I have a specialty chemical company. And we're working to get business in this tough economic world.
And you like to go to your Bearcats games, don't you, Oscar?
I go to quite a few Bearcats games, but they would like me to go, but I just difficult to go when they play. I'm sorry to say this, Kennesaw and South Carolina Upstate and Presbyterian. I just think those are good teams in their own league, but if you're a big time basketball team, you don't play those teams.
No. Who do you follow any pro teams, Oscar?
Not a lot of them. There's not a lot of coaching in pros. I think that Golden State and San Antonio and those teams, they got good athletes and they seem to have a pretty good system. Other than this coming down the floor, one guy gets the ball and everyone's watching him. And if he can't get it, he throws it. He's all over the floor shooting shots, and it just didn't happen like that.
I recently saw a photo at the All-Star game. You sitting with Bill Russell and Dr. J.
Oh, yes.
What's a conversation like that like?
Oh, we were talking about different things, you know, about the game itself and what they were doing and you know, just really the crowd and matter of fact, talk about a lot of different things, really.
Yeah. Well, that's when it was a game.
A long time.
Yeah. I always tell people Dr. J was doing it before Michael Jordan was. I remember Dr. J when I was a kid with the ABA Nets, and he was doing that stuff way before Jordan was.
One of the greatest open court players I've ever seen.
Yeah. The doc was operating way before that, Oscar.
Well, that's true. I mean, well, you know, this is what is really really bothers me about basketball. It's that you have people on the TV and on behind the radio mic. Have you ever heard of Elgin Baylor?
Sure.
They never give him any kind of kudos for anything at all. Being a great basketball player.
No. Yeah.
Nobody. I wonder why.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost as if the guys who played here never drilled the ball behind the back through the legs. Pass the ball behind the back. Ever dunked the ball? Ever blocked anybody's shot? They think it's because the TV, it's almost like, now, if a guy can dunk a basketball, he's a great player.
Right.
I mean, that's all that makes the highlight. You know, if a guy, a dunks make the top 10 highlights, the highlight show. You ever see a great defensive player who keeps his feet on the floor, and makes play good defense, helps out and whatnot in situations like that. Because I don't think people who call the games understand what they're trying to do. For instance, if you're coaching and you got a guy 7'2", are you gonna have him go out in the middle of the court and set a pick for a guard? Why is he doing the basket? He should be that's where it should be his territory. But to have a 7'2" guy go out of the middle of the floor, send a pick, I just think it's useless.
There's nothing like the days with the guys with the short pants, Oscar.
Well, you know, short pants. I mean, that was all a marketing gimmick anyway.
Exactly.
So, and it worked.
Well, I tell you, Oscar, it's been an honor talking about your great career in the NBA. You're one of the greatest athletes in sports of all time, and I'd like to thank you for taking time out of your Sunday night to talk with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
The legendary Big O, Oscar Robertson, ladies and gentlemen. Next up, we'll hit the ice to talk some hockey with former Ranger and Islander Darius Kasparaitis. Stay with us, folks.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue with you on this mid-March Sunday evening on Long Island. The big thaw happening around here. The Mets and Yankees camp in full swing. The Mets on SNY, I guess it's Tuesday, St. Patrick's Day this week. I wish everybody a happy St. Patrick's Day. We're waiting to get Darius Kasparaitis on the telephone, former defenseman with the New York Islanders and the New York Rangers. Very glad to talk to Oscar Robertson on the telephone tonight. Great interview with Oscar. It's an honor speaking with him. Darius Kasparaitis spent 16 seasons in the NHL with the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Colorado, easy for me to say, Avalanche, and, of course, with the New York Rangers and the New York Islanders on their blue line. He also won a gold medal in 1992 at Albertville. I welcome to the Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Darius Kasparaitis. Darius, good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, sir. It's a pleasure having you with us. Now, Darius, you're from Lithuania. Who did you grow up rooting for? Who were your favorite players?
When I grew up in Lithuania, you know, I didn't see a lot of NHL hockey. So I root for, you know, teams like Dynamo Moscow, Red Army, you know, when I watch World Championships.
Yeah.
You know, of course, I rooted for USSR team, you know, Soviet team, because, you know, that's what I grew up watching.
Sure. Okay. Now, Lithuania is mainly known for basketball. The Grateful Dead designed the jerseys. I remember that. You were the first Lithuanian on the Moscow Dynamo, right, at age 16?
Yeah, you know, when I was playing Lithuania, I was, you know, I never dreamed about playing a BHAG. You know, I just wanted to play somewhere else because Lithuania had no no future for me in Lithuania. And when they Dinamo Moscow, one of the greatest players to play for the Dinamo Moscow, Valery Vasiliev, a great defenseman, he came up to me when I was like 14 years old and asked me if I want to play in Moscow.
Uh-huh.
I thought he was joking, you know, and then when he asked me to, you know, he asked me if I want to play. I said, of course I want to play today. He said, okay, you will. And then, you know, if that happened, you know, it's kind of, it was the biggest, you know, thing for me in my career, like young career, you know, to go from Lithuania to the biggest city in the Soviet Union and play for one of the biggest clubs.
Sure. Now, you won gold at Albertville in 92. You played for the Unified team. How was that? How was that experience?
You know, it was unexpected because I was playing World Junior, and I think during the World Junior, Soviet Union fell apart, so we had no team. Basically, we had no country to play for.
Okay.
But I think that year we won, you know, 92 won World Junior Championship in Tucson in Germany. And what happened, you know, when I came back from Germany, I was not invited to a training camp for the, you know, first team to play in Olympics. So what happened, after 2 days of the camp, they invited me to go there. And my dream was just to play, and, you know, I just want to make the team and go to Olympic Games. I never dreamed about winning a gold. And when we did that, you know, it was shocking because all the players, the good players, you know, all the legends left Russia or Soviet Union in 1991 and early 92. So we had a very young team. And basically, you know, what we did, you know, still stands up today. You know, since the last time the Russia or Unified team won a gold medal was 1992.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were drafted by the Islanders with the fifth pick in the 92 entry draft. Was that expected?
I knew that I had some kind of, you know, I knew that I had, I didn't have a name, but I had, you know, accomplishments. You know, I was Olympic champion, you know, at age 19. I was, you know, best defenseman World Junior Championship, you know. And I knew that I was, you know, I had some kind of credential, but I didn't know that I'm gonna go number five, you know. And I didn't know definitely I'm gonna be a New York Islander, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, shocking because I remember during the draft, you know, I was at the draft. I traveled to Montreal, and I felt like I was already old. You know, all the guys like I was born 1972, and the guys who were not born 1973, they had more attention. So I felt like I don't know, maybe I was not, I don't belong there or something. Maybe I was too small. Was too short, my size was not perfect. So when I got drafted by New York Islanders, I was very happy. But honestly, I had no idea where I was going because I heard about Derek Rangers, but never actually heard about New York Islanders.
Okay, yeah. We're speaking to Darius Gasparaitis tonight. You played in 79 games in 92-93, and right away you became a fan favorite. I guess the fans liked the fact that you liked to hit. Was that always your style of play, Darius?
You know, I was a physical defenseman even when I played in Russia, but not as physical as I play in NHL. What happened when I came to NHL, I don't know, my first game, I remember, first game against the Devils, we played in Madeline. And what happened, my first shift, I hit the two guys, same shift, I actually hit it one. With one hit, I hit two guys, and I was like, wow. So, and what happened to me, it was very easy because I wasn't very mobile. I think I skated very well, and my, you know, backwards, and that, my hip check was very, you know, easy to throw around. So I realized that was an easy thing to do. You know, I realized people loved it, so I say, why not? You know, and
yeah.
I really, you know, kind of got this, you know, right away, this, you know, influence on the coach. They say, you know, I can play against top players, and I can hit top players. I don't care who it is, and you know, I started doing it right away, and I guess people loved it.
Right. Your coach for the Islanders was Al Arbour, the Hall of Famer. What did you learn from Al?
Well, Al was, you know, I was very fortunate to, you know, to come to New York and have a coach like Al because he was like a father to me. He was actually older than my father, and the things like, you know, he was tough, but he always had this, you know, like little spark or little love after he's being tough. You know, if I had a bad game, he would give me a tough time. You know, but the next day he would come up in the morning. And he would, you know, talk. And it would be like, you know, walking around and giving me stares. You know, he would just explain to me. And, you know, like to a child. Like, father would get mad at his son. And the next day he would try to explain why he got mad. And he would, mm-hmm. would be done. You know, he would say, you know what? Let's just keep working. You know, you're doing a good job. So that's why Al put a lot of influence on me. You know, my first year was probably one of the best years I had in NHL. You know, even I was so young. because, you know, only one thing I have issues with Al is always check my weight, you know. You always had a scale, even on the road. Even on the road, when we used to travel, he used to call me in the morning, say, Casper, come to my room, I have to check how much you weigh. Because I remember my first year, I was a little crazy, you know. I used to go from Long Island, I used to go to Brooklyn, to Brighton Beach, and go eat Russian food. So I would be like maybe 200 pounds, you know, day before, and day after be 210. And Al would be like, oh, my God, what happened? Where do you get 10 pounds in one day, you know? I would tell him, no, I ate Russian borscht. What do you want to do, you know? It would be like, no more borscht for you, you know?
Yeah, I think I'd have an issue with Al, too, with the weight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you played with some great players with the Islanders, though, Darius. You played with Turgeon, Ziggy Palfy. Tell us a little bit about some of the guys you played with on the Islanders.
You know what? It's so funny. That my first 2 years with the Islanders, actually, my first year, the team from first year, 92-93 season, we still keep in touch. Even, I don't think we accomplished a lot as a team. You know, we beat the defending Stanley Cup champions, Pittsburgh Penguins. And, but playing with Orjan, having guys like Ray Ferraro or Glenn Healy or Patrick Flatley, you know, who was teaching me how to be a professional, how to be off ice, how to deal with the everyday pressure to be a professional hockey player, you know, because I came from the environment that was controlled, you know, in Russia I was, you know, controlled by coaches, by system, you know. All we did, you know, we had a one day off. We stayed in the dorms, we practiced, we ate, we slept, and we did everything together, you know. Here was freedom, you know, you do whatever you want. So they always told me, you know, you have to be very careful what you do off ice. You have to be very careful who you hang out with and, save you money, you know, uh-huh. Things like that. So I really, you know, my first team was very important to me because I still remember, I think, every single player who played in my first team.
That's great. Now, you also had a couple of other coaches. You had Lauren Henning. You had Milbury. What did you think of Milbury?
Oh, Mike was a different cookie. You know, he was a tough guy. But, you know, I have nothing against Mike, you know. I know you traded me to Pittsburgh, you know, which ended up working out for me pretty good, you know. But still, I was very shocked. I felt like Mike liked me when they came to the island. You know, I felt like we were, like, you know, was kind of supporting my style of play. He loved how I play, and I thought that I'm going to be there, whatever, you know, for the rest of my career, you know, as an Islander. And, things happen in life, and especially as a professional athlete, you know, you have to move. But, Mike was tough, but Mike was also, you know, old-time hockey. You know, he played in old-time hockey, and, he was a good coach. And I guess he was not a bad GM, but he made a lot of wrong mistakes, trading a lot of talent, but, you know, maybe at that time he had no choice. Lauren Henning, you know, was an assistant coach to Al Arbour, so, you know, we still had a relationship from, when he was assistant coach. So, I only have respect, you know, for the coaches that they coached, you know. I wish I was more open-minded and humble, you know. When you're young and you feel like you're this big shot hockey player or whatever, you know, sometimes you don't want to listen to them. But now, when you get older, you know, you wish, you know, I realized how stupid I was sometimes. I acted like a baby, you know what I'm saying? But I think, you know, you learn.
I know what you're saying.
That's why we don't play hockey when we're 40. Or some guys do. Jagger and all, you know.
He's the only one, Darius. You know? Yeah.
He never listened to the coaches. Maybe that's why he plays all the time.
We're talking to Darius Gasparitis tonight. Now, Darius, you kind of had the reputation of having the great Mario Lemieux in your pocket. Now, in the second round of the 93 playoffs against the Penguins, like we were talking about, you kind of kept him in check. Now, Mario remembered that, and he kind of recommended to the Penguins that they bring you over to bolster their blue line. Now, Milbury traded you over there for Smolinski. He felt the Islanders needed some scoring, so he considered you like a fifth defenseman. He sent you to Pittsburgh. Were you glad to leave the island, or you felt you had a better chance going to a better club?
At that time, the evening I was packing to go on a West Coast trip, when Mike called me, I was shocked because Mike told me, you know, he's not going to trade me anywhere. I'm going to be there as long as he's going to be on the team. So And then the next day, he actually traded me. So I was very shocked. You know, I even cried because I was very, you know, I was, you know, I didn't believe that that happened, you know. And I was going on a team that people hated me there, you know. I remember playing in 93 playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, they, with the name calling and, you know, call me a rat and call me, you know, all the names and all the signs and, you know, people just totally, you know, being against, you know, how I play. So I didn't really know what to expect. And going to a guy's, you know, playing with a, going from, Islanders that I don't think we had a, you know, that caliber player like Lemieux, you know, Jagr or Francis, you know, and going to a team that had those players. I was very nervous, but, you know, when I got there, I was shocked how easy was everything there. The atmosphere, you know, and the practice, and the guys, how, you know, the guys were so enjoying the game and not really believing in training so hard in the beginning.
Well, I'll read a quote to you that I found online from a New York Times article when you were traded. It says, "I'm all right. My wife's a little upset. You never know. Maybe I'll come back. Or maybe I'll come back as a Ranger."
Wow, yeah.
That's what you said. That's, imagine that.
That was, yeah. That,
kind of prophetic.
I tell you why I said that, because I was so mad at the Islanders. That's why I said.
Yeah.
I now remember that, because that's why I said, I'm okay, but, you know, maybe I come back as a Ranger.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, kind of said, you know, to Islanders that, you know, you did something that I was not really appreciated.
Yeah.
So that's why I said that, but I didn't know I knew I was going to come back as a Ranger. It worked out.
Now, for a little bit in Pittsburgh, you got to play for Herb Brooks. Give us a little bit. Were you able to formulate an opinion on Herb?
I don't know. Herb was very easygoing. You know, I feel like those years in Pittsburgh, we didn't have. Besides Kevin Constantine, I think he had some kind of structure and some kind of, you know, discipline on our team. And it was like, you know, everyday routine was almost the same. But Herb Brooks was all-time coach, you know, he came in, you know, the team was already formed. I don't think he did much, you know. He brought us, you know, he always kept his pride, you know, that he beat the Russians in 1980, and he always told us the stories how he did it. You know, we had a lot of guys from former Soviet Union on the team, so he always kind of, you know, told us how he did it.
Yeah.
You know, but anytime, you know, Herb was great. You know, Ivan Halinka, unfortunately, they both died same year. But, you know, those guys were like, you know, we were just the coaches that, you know, that loved the game and let the players play the game.
Yeah. Good old Herb. Yeah, he was a great man. Now, two things memorable from your time in Pittsburgh. There was a hit on Lindros, on Eric Lindros, that knocked him out for 18 games. I don't know if you remember that. And then there was a Game 7 overtime goal versus the Sabres in 2001. I don't know if you remember that either. Two big moments.
Of course I remember.
You remember both of them?
That's why they have YouTube. People keep talking about it. Eric Lindros hit, which at that time was, you know, a big hit. Right now, I don't know if I'm very proud of it, but some people, you know, still tell me about it. You know, a Game 7 overtime goal, you know, it's something cool to keep in memory for the rest of my life. You know?
Yeah, sure.
I remember watching the game day before. I think some playoff game on TV, and me and my roommate, it was Renny Corbett, talking about what happens, because we knew we were playing Game 7. What happens if you score Game 7 overtime goal? I remember he was asking me. I told him, first of all, I would never score, but if I do, I don't know what I do, you know? And that's why it was so funny that we talked about it, and then I scored next day. And I don't know, it was just something, you know, that, you know, you remember, you know, the celebration. I didn't plan it, I just did it, you know. Probably as a kid, being happy that I scored, and I didn't know how to act, so I just
yeah,
tied my belly and start kicking my feet. I don't know, you know, I was just expressing how I felt. I think if Jagr scored or Lemieux, they wouldn't act like that, but, you know, I did it that way because, you know, I actually didn't expect to score. I didn't even think about scoring, you know.
Well, you don't score 50 a year like they do.
I know, they you know. But they don't hit 50 times a year.
Exactly. Now you were a member of the bronze medal team at 2002 in Salt Lake City, and you also won a medal in 1998 in Nagano during that time. So you're adding to your medals for the Olympics. Now you later left Pittsburgh. You went to Colorado. But yeah. you're only there a short time, but you had the pleasure of defending for the great Patrick Roy. Now, how was that?
Colorado was, you know, strange because I got traded at the end of the, you know, trading deadline. So it was a very short period there. And the team was, you know, I felt like, you know, I didn't feel like, you know, the guys were great. You know, I played with the great players like Saki Forsberg, you know, Patrick Roy,
right.
Robert Blake, Adam Foote, you know. So I felt, you know, I felt out of place, you know, like, because, you know, they were defending cup champions, I think, and things like, you know, and I knew that was my chance maybe to win a Stanley Cup with playing for the team like that, you know. And we came close. But, you know, playing for Patrick, I remember one thing. He told me one thing. Do not hit anybody in our zone. Just play a stick, you know, poke check, because I don't want you to get out of position, you know, because I want you to keep everybody in front of you and don't run around and try to, you know, hit people. And I was thinking that time. I remember, why would they get me, you know, to go around if they don't want me to hit? So I realized, you know, they had a system, and they believe in my abilities to play defense. So, you know, I had a good time. It was short. You know, sometimes it's hard for me to even tell people that I play for Colorado Avalanche because I played for such a short time. I don't feel like I was part of the team. You know, I was part of the team, but I don't feel like, you know, I belong because I didn't do my time. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So it's so hard sometimes to relate, you know, but I had a great time, and I had a great memories, and I always, you know, remember times in Denver, you know, being totally different atmosphere, being on the West Coast, you know. I realized then that I was an East Coast guy because, you know, West Coast was totally different hockey and totally different travel schedule.
Well, one time that people do remember is your time with the Rangers now. You played for Trotz and Sather there in your first year. Did you have any problem with Lindros when you came over with the Rangers?
Actually, when I became a free agent, Eric Lindros called me. I remember July 2nd, 2002, I think he called me. And he told me, Casper, I have no hard feelings. He was already on the team, say I really wanted to play for your Rangers. And I remember Don Maloney came to my house around like 2 o'clock in the morning. He gave me a Rangers, like a welcome kit, for me to make a decision if I want to play for the Rangers, you know. Because I think I had a choice to make Rangers, Boston Bruins, or Toronto Maple Leafs. And I don't know why I chose the Rangers, because probably of the, you know, Madison Square Garden, because I lived in New York for most of my life being in America. And I really, you know, I think, you know, being an Islander, that was one thing, but, you know, I was not an Islander, so for me it was not really, you know, hard feelings. I just, you know, I decided to, you know, become a Ranger.
Sure.
And with Eric, everything was fine. You know, we formed a great friendship. You know, he was a great guy to be. You know, he'd be a teammate. And unfortunately, you know, I didn't have a great success with the Rangers, but you know, I had a good time. It's a very high, you know, high class organization, and they still actually email me and still invite me to all the alumni events. And if I'm in town, they give me a ticket. So, no, they are a very high class organization, and I'm very proud that I was a Ranger. You know?
Definitely. Now you got to play with Messier, Leach. You had a reunion with Yager and with Vladimir Malakoff.
Malakoff.
Yeah. And Lundqvist was just starting out during your time there.
It's funny, yeah. Hendrik, when he came, because my second wife was, you know, she spoke Swedish. She was born in Sweden, but she grew up in Canada, but she still spoke Swedish. So Hendrik and his wife, Therese, our girlfriend at that time, they lived in my house for like 3 months almost, you know. I took him under my wing, you know. I showed him how to be a professional, actually. But no, Hendrik, yeah, I remember Hendrik coming to the league and having his chance to be a goalie, and he took the chance. You know, everybody, nobody knew who Hendrik was until he started playing for the Rangers. I think one of the goalies got hurt, and Hendrik became a number one goalie. So, you know, Rangers, you know, playing with all those great players, also, you know, with them, I remember every time I played against Messier, I always had issues with him, you know, but playing with him on the same team and seeing his leadership skills, you know, it was just amazing. You know, I'm very fortunate to play with, you know, Hall of Famers like that, like Messier, Lemieux, Jagr, you know, Saki, whatever, you know,
Leach.
You know. Leach, you know, I had a great time being a part of the team.
You were also alternate captain.
Yeah, 1 year. I mean, you know, we had no captain, so you know, by being one of the older guys on the team, I think Tom Rennie made me, Jagr, and Steve Rusch in the alternate captains. You know, and we had a great season. I think we made the playoffs first time in like, I don't know, 6 years, 7 years that year. And that's when we, you know, made it a salute to the fans, which is still
Yeah. I was going to mention your little you left an enduring impression with the Ranger fans with your little salute. Tell the folks, I'm sure they know about that.
No, but what happened? You remember that we had a big game against Capitals. It was a shootout game, and we had I think like 15 players, you know, shootout, 50 players shooting. I was actually last guy on the team to shoot before Matic Malik was the last guy before me. So when he scored that goal, you know, the highlight goal, when he scored, I remember we were celebrating, and I told Jaromir, let's put everybody in the middle like we do sometimes in Europe. In Europe, we do, we just say thank you to the fans. But I told Jack, let's just bring all the players to the middle and say thank you, you know, just raise the stakes. To like, you know, because that was the year was, you know, after lockout, everybody, I don't know, we just say thank you to the fans. So it became, you know, for our team that year, it became like a habit. Every time we win a game, we would, you know, salute the fans. And also that year, every time we're winning the game, maybe 1 minute left in the game, and if we're up by two or three goals, they used to play the song Sweet Caroline because Jaromir loved the song. So it was funny, you know. It became, you know, our team thing. And right now, seeing a lot of teams do it, it's kind of cool, you know. It's kind of cool that it became part of NHL.
Definitely, yeah. That's a great legacy. Now, quickly, Darius, Rangers versus Islanders today. Who are you rooting for?
Good question. I never root for anyone. If I go to a New York team, like if I go to New York and the Rangers playing, I don't know. It's hard to tell me. Like it's hard. I don't think any professional. If I was working for one of the teams, I probably root for the team that I'm working for. But when you you know, when I play for both teams, I want them to do well. You know, if the Rangers are doing well, you know, I'm happy. If Islanders doing well, I'm happy. When they play against each other, I don't know. You know, it's hard. It's hard to tell me.
Okay, well, Darius,
because I you know, I can't root for even Pittsburgh. You know, I cannot root against Pittsburgh. Or I don't know. It's tough.
All right, we'll let you get away with that. Well, it's been a pleasure having you with us tonight, Darius, talking Rangers Islanders hockey about your NHL career. Thanks for being with us.
All right, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Darius Kasparaitis, folks. Well, that'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guests, Oscar Robertson and Darius Kasparaitis, and you for joining us. Thanks for tuning in. Hour 2 coming up with Andrew Joseph and Eric Getzoff. Sports Talk 1240. I'll be back with you next Sunday, March 22nd and 8th, with Boston Celtic Hall of Famer Dave Cowens and more. Till then, Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.